Bethel, or parallel Semitic forms of the same word, have been brought into connection with Baetelos or Baetelos, the stone swallowed by Cronus. In other words, the sacred stone of the Cretan Zeus. Now, strange as it may appear, Cronus is Israel, that is Jacob, while Zeus, Jupiter, his royal son, is Judah. Sankhniatho, the most ancient writer of the Phoenician world, writes, quote, it's here in Greek, the translation, Cronos, whom the Phoenicians call Israel. The auxiliaries of Cronos are called Elohim. It was said that heaven had devised for him Bethel stones, endowing them with life. Moreover, now as Gilgamesh, the Babylonian epic of the flood, adds Penumbria, and is not under the oracle protective eye of God, and adds things that are not true to the story that is recorded by the oracle voice in Scripture, the Phoenician historian and the Phoenician records and Miz will add Penumbria to the story, but it's still the same connection. They were aware of Jacob. Cronus, or rather Jacob, Cronus, circumcised himself, the Phoenician writer, historian says, and forced his allies to do the same. Now, Cronus, still quoting the Phoenician historian, had a special son, Yehud in the Greek, a name wanting only the closing breath to be letter for letter the same as Yehuda, Judah. The Greek Zeus or Jupiter is but a variant of the same. The fact remains that according to their own historian, the Phoenician Cronus is Israel, and consequently Jehud, Judah. Baetelos, the stone swallowed by Cronus, identifies with the sacred stone of Zeus, also identifies at once with Bethel, the stone carried by Israel, the consecrated stone of the scepter and throne of Judah, conveyed westward, ultimately to Ireland. On such a stone wonderful called Leofael, which is spelled the same, backwards or forwards, written the same, be it Hebrew or Grecian form. On such a stone wonderful the great Heremon of Ireland was crowned. The Chronicles of Erie tell the story. The story of Leofael, as they start with the story of Abraham. I find it amazing that those mythological distortions would equate Cronus with Israel and Jupiter with Judah out of the 12 sons, the one destined to be king. Now we had come to this point last night. The new century had barely risen above the horizon. We had traced the genealogy of David through the daughters of Zedekiah who went to Egypt. Sir Flinders Petrie has dug at the very city of Grecian mercenaries. Why do you think they stayed at the city of Grecian mercenaries? Because it was descendants of Judah through Zara that founded Athens and Troy. The connection, as the Spartans are connected in Josephus' record and the Maccabean record, and they are known to be descendants of the same Hebraic stream. And the priest at Jerusalem writes the ruler of Troy in the Maccabean letters. They're staying at a Grecian, distant relative mercenary camp. Sir Flinders Petrie has dug at the city, the daughter of Zedekiah, Tiatephi, Taphanes. God had promised to Jeremiah and his remnant that they would escape, be helped by strangers, and he would go to a land he didn't know about. We trace the history in the Chronicles of Erie and the critics of the genealogies of the High Kings of Ireland. Olamfala shows up with the daughter of a pharaoh, which simply means the daughter of a king, and a servant named Simon Breck within 5 years of his disappearance from Palestine. She is joined in wedding to the High King of Ireland, Ecgwet Heremon, crowned on Jacob's pillar, the stone of destiny, Leofael, receiving as her dowry a Jewish custom, the hill of Tara. Olamfala exacts the terms that it would become a school of the prophets. He takes the law that he says has been falsely credited to Baal, and the 9 laws are identical to 9 of the 10 commandments, and they become the laws of Erie and become the basis of the common law of England and the law of this land. And the lineage of David through the daughter of Zedekiah is linked to the High King of Ireland. At that point, we were running out of time. The new century had but barely risen above the horizon when fresh evidence was forthcoming of the Davidic origin of the British royal house. In the first place, it was noted that in Mr. Grimaldi's leaflet, it was stated that the descent of our royal family from the royal line of Judah is only a rediscovery. Now, if you can't find a descendant of David ruling over descendants of the tribes of Israel in the world today, God's a liar. If you cannot find the scepter and the priesthood united in the line of Judah ruling over tribes of Israel today, God's a liar. Sun's still coming up. Where is David's throne? Now, Ezekiel said concerning Zedekiah, that wicked last line of Pharaohs on appearance, when Nebuchadnezzar comes, Zedekiah, the descendant of Judah, the descendant of David, from the Pharaoh's line. His sons are slain, his eyes blinded, he's carried into bondage. Another of the Pharaoh's line comes back as Zerubbabel to be the governor. They build the second temple. And it is through that line that Jesus is born. But who do you think is sitting on the throne of the descendants of Judah when Jesus comes to do his ministry? None other than a descendant of Esau, an Edomian, who has been blended into the returned people that built the second temple. And a descendant of Esau, Herod, is sitting on the throne as an instrument of Satan to try to prevent the revelation of Messiah. And there are people that have said the throne of David is spiritual. That's not what God promised. God promised a place for Israel, and a place other than where David was ruling in the prime of his kingdom. And that as long as the sun was coming up, a descendant of David would be on a throne over Israel. Where? If you simply don't want to prove up God on this throne, which one will you pick, Monaco? I care about God's word. The descent of our royal family from the royal line of Judah. Now, all we've proven thus far is that the daughters of Zedekiah carried the seed of David, thus Judah, via the Pharaoh's line, and it was joined with the Irish kings, and we trace the genealogy of the Irish kings through that one that is called the prolific, whose 2 sons became the lineage of the kings of Ireland and Scotland until Fergus brought the stone to Scotland, called the Stone of Scone then. And then when England conquers Scotland, they take the symbol of royalty, the pillar of Jacob, to Westminster Abbey, and it sits under the coronation chair where the kings of England are crowned. Now, Ezekiel said, when Zedekiah, that wicked prince, is to be destroyed, God says, I will overturn, 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 and then no more. till he comes whose right it is. The overturn would be from Zedekiah to Ireland, from Ireland to Scotland, that's two, from Scotland to England, that's three. Then no more until he comes whose right it is to reign. And that prince in the final chapters of Ezekiel that rules during the millennium will reign. That means, strange as it may sound, as Dr. Craig Lamp found me that Manchester biography of the last lion, Winston Churchill, and that brilliant, funny looking but brilliant admiral of the British Navy, cursing the stupidity of some of the British regulations, screams it out to Winston Churchill, "We have to be the lost tribes. That's the only thing that explains us winning victories when we ought to be losing because of our stupidity." I refuse to give this truth over to nuts. For years I've been crusading, why should extremists be the only ones that can have faith healing? Because nuts misuse God's pattern of giving. Should we quit putting giving front and center? Because God certainly did. The battleground of the table of the Lord, I refuse to give way on it and put it on television. The truth of the table of grace, I refuse to let this baby be thrown out with the bathwater. Now, we've traced it through Zedekiah, his daughter to Ireland, and the lineage to England. But further, you see, when God really wants to make a point, he just hammers away over and over. Mr. Grimaldi's leaflet stated, "The descent of our royal family from the royal line of Judah is only a rediscover. The Saxon kings trace themselves back to Odin, who was traced back to his descent from David, as may be seen in a very ancient manuscript in Heralds College, London." Now, the Scandinavian god Bodin or Odin is but the same as the god of the Getae and the Massagetae in Thrace, those Cimmerian tribes that were the descendants of the lost tribes who elevated Moses to the position of a god and began to worship him. They elevated their heroes to godly states. As the Phoenician says, Jacob was made into Cronus or Saturn. Odin was but a prince who led his band to the Baltic Sea from north of the Black Sea. And history, Sharon Turner, we read it the other night, confirms that. Odin's lineage can be traced. Desiring to verify this, we wrote to Heralds College and received the positive assurance dated 5-2-1901 that, quote, "There's a very valuable manuscript here deducing our Saxon kings from Adam and through David. This manuscript we have inspected. It is called on the back of the binding, Pedigree of the Saxon Kings. Odin is there, and David is there, but one in one line apparently, and the other in another. That's what's strange. Odin and David, separate lines." One line for Odin, one line for David, unless the notes written in a very difficult script in the margins indicate connections. We were, however, assured that the impression in the Heralds College had always been that the manuscript traced the Saxon line of the Saxon kings through David to Odin. Now, the idea that such a lineage can be traced is a strange one if it has no foundation. Interested in the matter of our inquiry, our friend at the Heralds College told us of an Anna, said to be cousin to the Blessed Virgin Mary and mother of an early British king, as noted in a recent history of the Welsh. My friend told me, Joseph of Arimathea, I believe, started a dynasty at Glastonbury. Read books on the Holy Grail. These interesting communications have opened up a whole new world of discovery. He's writing in 1901, with the result that the new century may realize with much more assurance than it ever did the absolute literal fact that the Royal House of Britain is of the august origin claimed for it. Professor Rees, Celtic professor in the University of Oxford, and Mr. D. Brian Moore Jones, in their exhaustive work on the Welsh people, issued by Mr. Fisher Unwin in 1900, introduced to page 38, with a detailed investigation of his family relationships, the very important name in the history of British Christianity of Bran the Blessed, heir through his father of the famous line of British princes descended from Brutus of Troy. And right here, here's where we were last night. And you know the story in Geoffrey of Monmouth, how that a descendant of Dardanus, who founded Troy, when the Greeks defeated Troy, the father of Brutus fled to Italy. In a hunting accident, Brutus accidentally kills his father, is driven from Italy by the family, back to Greece, becomes a rebel leader of the prisoners from Troy, so successful that the king of Greece frees those prisoners, gives him 400 ships, and he sets sail through the Mediterranean to stop temporarily at the Iberian Peninsula, where other descendants of Zara, in the driving forth, as Diodorus of Sicily says, not only did the Exodus go with Moses, but some left by ships. Zaragoza is named after these descendants of Zara who settled in the Iberian Peninsula, which is nothing but the descendants of Eber. He leaves to go to Britain, founds New Troy, the oldest name of London, and becomes the earliest king of Britain. Always these chronicles were belittled, as historians belittled the myths of the Odyssey and the Iliad by Homer. And as I've already told you, when Schliemann dug Troy up, taking Homer as fact, some smart German philosopher still published his book that the Iliad and the Odyssey were but poetic ways of describing wind currents and tides, because he was reputation identified with his silliness. Geoffrey of Monmouth and the Chronicles of England need fresh attention, as Homer of Troy got fresh attention through the digs of Schliemann. From Brutus you trace the Silurian kings to Bran the Blessed. Bran the Blessed of Siluria, descended from Brutus of Troy, brings a lineage of Judah's line through Zara, through Troy, through Dardanus, through Brutus, to Bran the Blessed. Who is Bran the Blessed? Father of Caradoc. Caractacus is his Latin name. So grandfather of Gladys, the daughter of Caradoc, who as Claudia changes her name when the Roman Emperor Claudius adopts her. Wife of Pudens, Rufus Pudens, whom Paul addresses in Romans 16 and 2 Timothy 4. Caradoc is the great guerrilla fighter, king of Siluria, that the Romans could never conquer. But through treachery is betrayed, marches in chains to Rome. The citizens gather in the street to see the blonde-haired giant that the Roman legionaries could never conquer. Tacitus, in his Roman histories, tells the story of his speech and records it verbatim as he stood in front of the Roman legions and addresses them, saying, had there been no Caradoc, they would have no opportunity for this honor where they can show mercy. He has not been defeated in war. He was defeated and brought to them by treachery. And he so prevails with oratory on the Roman Senate that they grant him, first time ever, freedom from death, and give him asylum in a house in Rome, and give him a stipend from the taxes of Siluria. Caradoc, not yet a Christian, son of Bran the Blessed, daughter Gladys. Gladys had become attached to a Roman praetor who had been assigned to Britain and had had connection with the family. She marries Rufus Pudens, who becomes a Roman senator. She's adopted by her beauty and charm, adopted by the Roman emperor. This is heathen history. Claudius, who spared Caradoc, and their home, their famous home, none other than that famous home that people who visit Rome can still find the location of today, Palatium Britannicum. That's the home of the Gentile church in Rome that have the people in it that Paul's addressing in Romans 16 and 2 Timothy 4. He refers to Rufus Pudens and speaks to him, says, "Greet the mother of Rufus and me." Nobody yet has satisfied me that Paul's unusual power and his unusual ability as a freeborn Roman citizen that enabled him as a remote citizen in the empire to appeal to Caesar himself and make the trip is because his mother, either in second marriage or first marriage, was married to a high Roman figure who produced the brother of Paul, a Roman senator, to be Rufus Pudens, who marries the daughter of the king of Siluria and provides the household in Rome where the Christian church took root. The Christian church, the Gentile church, the Jewish church was in the household of Aquila and Priscilla. The church of the Gentiles that Paul formed was the kingly family of Rome, Caradoc, in the kingly family of Siluria from Britain, settled in Rome. That's the house from which Aristobulus, the father of Simon Peter's mother, Eubulus or Aristobulus, depending upon the language that uses his name, carried the gospel to Britain. It's from that household they communicated with the church in France. That's why Ignatius, who wrote the church great treatise against heresies that put the church on the track, that carried it for centuries, was Bishop of Lyon, the church in France, founded by that same family that went with Joseph of Arimathea. That's who we're encountering here. Bran the Blessed, father of Caradoc, grandfather of Gladys, who is Claudia, wife of Pudens, was with her husband, so instrumental in establishing the churches both of Rome and Britain. Why did Joseph of Arimathea have the ability to convert this household of the king of Siluria, who then would become the household in Rome from which the first powerful church of Rome is formed? In passing, it may be noted that the strongest and most detailed evidence has been before the public for now nearly 50 years in the Reverend W.R. Morgan's invaluable work entitled St. Paul in Britain, or The Origin of British as Opposed to Papal Christianity. I can find this book, Joe. Write it down before I leave and order it from England. You have to. St. Paul in Britain, or The Origin of the British as Opposed to Papal Christianity, by the Reverend W. Morgan. Every Christian in the world should have this book. I've read this book at least 5 times, and it still yields riches each time I read it. The most thoroughly researched book on the subject, I think, in print. The information has been around for 50 years, and he's writing in 1901. In the year A.D. 36, we read at page 105 of Mr. Morgan's book, Bran resigned the Silurian crown as king of England and turned the throne over to his son Caradoc, and Bran became archdruid of the College of Siluria, where he remained till called upon to be a hostage for his son. At the period of his accession to the British throne, Caradoc had 3 sons, Cillan or Cillinus, Luan or Linus, and Simon. He had 2 daughters, Urgane and Gladys, who became Claudia. Caradoc, already king of Siluria, was elected Pendragon or Arch-King, chief king, as King Arthur was the arch-king in later years. Caradoc was elected King Arthur, by the way, is a descendant of Joseph of Arimathea, and the archaeologists are proving him fact, not fiction. Caradoc, already a king of Siluria, was elected Pendragon or arch-king to head the armies of Britain against the second invasion of Rome. His last battle was fought in the autumn of A.D. 50... Am I boring you? His last battle was fought in the autumn of AD 52. The Roman victory was complete. Betrayed by treachery, Caradoc was captured. Claudius ordered him and all the captive family to be sent to Rome. The British triads commemorate this captivity of the royal family of Siluria. And as I've told you, Tacitus, the Roman historian, records verbatim his speech to the Roman Senate. Lear, the father of Bran, subsequently died at Rome. Bran voluntarily surrendered himself as a hostage. Caradoc was spared the usual fate of captive kings at Rome. I've told you that story. Pudens, a young Roman senator and relative of Aulus Plautius, and if he was the brother or half-brother of Paul, it will explain Paul's power and the fear of people when they understood his citizenship ties. The Roman commander-in-chief in the British War, and he was already engaged to Gladys. Now that's not strange. Another Roman general married another one of the relatives of Caradoc and his brother, a major general during those battles. She, the daughter of Caradoc, was adopted by the Emperor Claudius and assumed his family name Claudia. Caradoc took up his residence in the Palatium Britannicum, which afterwards became the first Christian church at Rome, the one to which Paul wrote his Roman epistle. Here Pudens and Claudia were married AD 53. Linus, the son of Caradoc, remained with them, and being ultimately consecrated by St. Paul himself to become the first bishop of the Roman Church. St. Paul arrived in Rome AD 56. Claudia and Pudens were already Christians when he came. Mr. Morgan, from 129 onward, gives evidence to establish the following propositions. We've been over it in two or three other books. Christianity was first introduced into Britain by Joseph of Arimathea between AD 36 to AD 39, followed by Simon the Zealot, the Apostle, then by Aristobulus, father of the wife of St. Peter, first bishop of the Britons, then by St. Paul, and the historicity of the 29th chapter of the book of Acts in the Cennini manuscript discovered in late 1700s tells that story. Its first converts, Joseph of Arimathea being the agent, were members of the royal family of Siluria, that is, Gladys, the sister of Caradoc. Gladys and Eurgen, his daughters. Linus, his son. There was a sister of Caradoc named Gladys, a daughter named Gladys. Linus, his son. These all were converted in Britain before they were carried into captivity to Rome. Caradoc and Bran, who went as a hostage later as a Druid archbishop, Caradoc and Bran and the rest of the family were converted at Rome. Now return to Bran. The authors of the Welsh people above referred to cite the Mabinogion, a collection of old Welsh tales, as calling Bran, the son of Lear, and Penardim, daughter of Beli, son of Minogan. Penardim, however, they show to have been Beli's sister, and Beli the son of not Minogan, but the words translated son of Minogan were not found in the original of the Mabinogi, having been introduced by subsequent hand. The actual words having been Beli Maur, Map Aun An, or Anau, which occurs as Beli, Mabarim Anna, in one of the pedigrees of Jesus College, Manuscript 20, which being translated is Beli the Great, son of Anna. Our author states further that one reads two sentences respecting Anna as follows, and I won't try to translate the Welsh. The rendering of one of them, this Anna, from whom Beli, this Anna, from whom Beli and Bran, who also was descended from Brutus, was a daughter to the emperor of Rome. And that Anna, the translation goes on to say, used to be said by the men of Egypt to be cousin to the Virgin Mary. This later statement that this Anna, who was a predecessor of Bran the Blessed, we know he descended from Brutus through the line of Zara, and on the female side in his pedigree is Anna, said by the men of Egypt to be cousin of the Virgin Mary. The latter statement, we quote still from Professor Reese and his colleague, is also made in the pedigree of Owen, son of Howel the Good, who is traced back to Amalek. And it goes again through a list of pedigrees to the cousin of Mary, the Virgin, mother of our Lord Jesus Christ. Independent sources linking Bran through Anna as the cousin of Mary, the mother of Jesus. This genealogy of Owen up to Anna is incorporated in the Annals Cambria, edited by the Reverend J.W. Ab Ittle, rector of Lanimaudi, Marionethshire, and published by the authority of the Lords Commissioners of His Majesty Treasury, Longmans, 1860, under the direction of the Master of the Rolls. In this same manuscript, at the same place, is recorded the pedigree of Owen's mother, Ellen, up to Constantine the Great and his royal British mother, the Empress Helena, who on further research proves to have been eighth in descent. By the way, Constantine was descended through the British kings, and he Christianized the Roman Empire, and it was his mother, Helena, who opened up for the first time and consecrated the shrines to Christianity throughout the Holy Land. Empress Helena, who on further research proves to have been eighth in descent from Bran the Blessed, son of Lear, and Panardim, sister of Beli, whose mother was Anna, quote, cousin of Virgin Mary. The Tudor ancestors, then, of the present royal family. I know this is heavy, but too many people on this subject don't give you the documentation. The Tudor ancestors of our present royal family are thus by two lines descended from the Davidic princess Anna. King Owain, on his mother's side, was 41st from her. On his father's side, he was 35th from Anna. Owen Tudor was 14th in descent from Owen, and from him 15 generations bring us to the present sovereign, King George being the sovereign when the book was written. King George is thus 64th or 71st in descent from Anna, the cousin of the Virgin Mary. How can these things be? How came the Blessed Virgin's cousin Anna here in Britain and married to a prince of Britain, the mother of future British kings? She was here already to welcome that earliest band of missionaries who brought the gospel of her cousin's son to Britain within 5 years of his ascension, and who by the courtesy of a British king established in Britain the first of all the national churches in the world. The story of the mission of Joseph of Arimathea is told in Mr. Morgan's St. Paul in Britain. Read his book through. I'd say the same thing. It is here shown, from pages 87 to 216 in this book, that Joseph and his fellow evangelists came here, to be followed later by St. Paul himself. Tradition says that Joseph brought with him the sacred vessels, the chalice used by the Savior in founding the Eucharistic feast, the bases of substance of the Holy Grail. Hence came the beautiful Arthurian legend of the quest for the lost holy elements. We've talked already about Joseph of Arimathea founding the church and asked the question, did Joseph, as the uncle of Mary, who became the guardian of Jesus at the death of Joseph, take Jesus with him, as legends at Glastonbury and Cornwall have it, between his 12th birthday when he disappears from gospel records and his 30th birthday when he returns, those lost 18 years, did he take him traveling with him to the British Isles? From the days of King Solomon, there was regular traffic between Palestine and Britain in 10. What then should hinder a British prince wedding a daughter of Judah? Joseph of Arimathea was the younger brother of the father of the Virgin Mary. He thus was Mary's uncle, Jesus' great uncle. The records of Glastonbury, as cited by Malmesbury and others, preserves the genealogy of his descendants in Britain. Helios Nepos Joseph Genoese Joshua. Thus the grandson of Joseph of Arimathea, born in Britain, was named Heli. The authors of the Welsh people, quote Geoffrey of Monmouth as naming Beli Heli. This Heli or Beli was, according to those ancient authorities, the son of Anna, the cousin of Virgin Mary. Joseph of Arimathea, just a line or two above in these chronicles, is shown as the ancestor of a line of British princes, commencing with his grandson Heli, and he himself was the uncle of the Virgin Mary. The whole story becomes quickly clear, and let me tell it. Joseph of Arimathea, a wealthy owner of shipping fleets, minister of mines, Jerome's Vulgate refers to him as noblest decorum. That's why he had access to Pilate that terrible day, both a member of the Sanhedrin and a minister of mines, owning a great fleet of ships trafficking constantly from Marseille, the tin trade in Cornwall. The miners in Cornwall today still sing Joseph was a tin miner. The legends of Glastonbury and Cornwall have Jesus coming with him between the years 12 and 30 and literally teaching them secrets of smelting tin from the mines. That's why Augustine says the first house of God was built in Britain by the hands of the Savior himself. Staying one trip in meditation, they remember the young man. He wouldn't tell who he was in terms of his messiahship. Old crafty Joseph had an in with the British kings. His daughter married one of them. So we not only have the link up of Joseph, his daughter Anna was already married to a British prince or king, from whom the descendants of the kings of England, the daughter of Joseph of Arimathea, had been sought in marriage by a prince of Britain. She was there to welcome him and his fellow workers when they came. Now you know why they'd head immediately with ships and oars. Why not go to Ethiopia? Why not go to Africa? They went straight to Marseille, left off the rest of the band to found the churches that are marked all through the south of France. And Joseph of Arimathea went to where he had been going, to Glastonbury, went to where Jesus had built the little hut to live in above ground that is encased in Glastonbury, the first church above ground, the Wattle Church. He went to where his daughter was already married to a prince of England. That's why he converted the household of the king first off, and that household became the foundation of the church in Britain and the foundation of the church in Rome. And yet, Satan changes the history. And the Babylonian church would rob the Anglo-Saxon church of its rich heritage. And people have lived and died in the church and know none of this history. The following genealogy results. Heli and Joseph of Arimathea were brothers. Mary and Anna, their daughters, were cousins. A grandson named Heli, drawing from earlier names, is the ancestor of Howell the Good, father and Ellen, mother of King Owen, ancestor of the Tudors, and Thenardim of Lear, ancestress, So through both Joseph of Arimathea of the Judah line, Anna his daughter, we have in the Tudor lines the descendancy of Judah. We have through Zedekiah's daughter married to the high kings of Ireland, whose sons produced the kings of Ireland and Scotland. We have the lineage that comes into the British throne of Zedekiah's line through David. We have Judah's line also perpetuating the Davidic line through Joseph of Arimathea and his daughter Anna in the kings of England. Now, let's get Zara. Through Brutus, through Bran the Blessed, we have Zara and Judah joined in Bran, a descendant of Judah through Joseph of Arimathea and Anna, and a descendant of Zara. The Pharah's line through Joseph of Arimathea that comes Pharah's through David, through Joseph of Arimathea and Anna, the Zara line through Brutus. But I want to take you to Ecwyd Heramon and the Zara line through the Saxon kings. But I think I'm too heavy. I may be boring you. Nobody that's a Christian should be without this book. St. Paul in Britain. My hero. I'm a Paulinist. Don't call me any denomination. I'm a Paulinist. The traditions of our Scandinavian forefathers tell of a great conqueror, the hero king of Asgard, Odin. He was so heroic a king. I'm reading from the Royal House of Britain, An Enduring Dynasty by the Reverend W.M.H. Milner. He was so heroic a king, so great a conqueror, that the superstition or reverence of after ages made a god out of him. His name in Hebrew, Odin, is so close to the basis of the Hebrew word for Lord, Adonai. One ancient genealogy table gives his name as Bodo, also Hebrew, as in Buddha, signifying solitary eminence, a unique man. It's quite likely that Odin was his title. Bodo the Odin would readily account for the W sound prefixing itself in the form Boden, a Woden, as it would naturally come in between the vowel sound and the Hebrew definite article, or the vowel sound of the Hebrew definite article and the initial vowel of the name. Tradition has it he led our forefathers across Europe. Asgard has been variously located in Armenia or on the Dnieper. In either case, his victorious march traversed Russia, Germany, Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. To him a crown was given by the great overruler. He multiplied, crowning his sons kings of the countries he conquered. And so many of the Scandinavian dynasties traced to Odin, thereby securing his own position as the royal ancestor in the line of all the dynasties of Europe. They converge as if by one consent in the royal house of Britain. The Saxon kings of England bore as their badge the white horse. The white horse is cut in the turf of many chalk escarpments. Stephen the Norman displayed on his shield a centaur. The white horse came in later with the House of Hanover, marking their Saxon origin. Now Saxon, Norman, Hanoverian, all were from Odin, to you that know your genealogies of kings. His period can even be ascertained. Without a single link wanting, you can trace both the king and queen of Britain back to five of Odin's sons. It will be remembered that the authorities of Harold's College, when we were reading that earlier, had long been, prior to 1902, under the impression that the great manuscript pedigree of the Saxon kings traced through David. Now, while the Hebrew royal family was that of David, the Hebrew royal tribe, and the family that tribe represented was David's tribe of Judah. of whom it was foretold, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come. That perpetual sovereignty remains with Judah is clear from Scripture. Now of old, the royal ancestor of Saxon and Norman, Tudor and Stuart, Hanoverian, Hanoverian, later Saxon and Danish kings, his name is Hebrew for eminence, his title is Hebrew for Lord. His only recorded granddaughter bore the name of Judith. This at any rate is established by that old Heralds College manuscript pedigree, which names her as the daughter of Sixnot, son of Odin. Judith is pure Hebrew, meaning Lady of Judah. She becomes a favorite name of the family. Matilda is another favorite name for princesses and the lines descended from Odin. From the verb ild, to grow, the Hebrew forms naturally a participle. Matil, meaning able to trace one's genealogy. Feminine, Matilde, Matilda, a lady of high degree. Hebrew by descent, bearing a Hebrew name. Odin himself can be shown to be a son of Judah. For in the Lengfagadal, which is described by Sharon Turner, and I had her book out here the other night, reading it here, not her, his. Sharon's normally a woman, but not in this case. Sharon Turner, in Book 3, Chapter 2 of his History of the Anglo-Saxons, Odin is described as being, and this document is described as one of the oldest Icelandic documents that now exist, Odin is described as being traced back to the original Jupiter, which in an earlier lesson we saw was the son of Saturnus of Crete, as it's called in the old Icelandic document. So there's conformity with what the Phoenician historian said. Jupiter, son of Saturnus of Crete, or the Cretan Cronus. The original Jupiter, by Sakaniotho, the Phoenician historian, was none other than, in the Greek and the Levantine tradition, Judah of the 12 sons of Cronus, identified with Israel or Jacob. The late Dr. George Grote, in the chapter of his voluminous History of Greece, deals with the legend of Troy and gives the following genealogy: Cronus, Zeus or Jupiter, Dardanus, Erectonius, Tros, Elis, Laomedon, Priam. From the Icelandic genealogy of Odin, Iceland's an area that I'm very interested in their history through stamp collecting. They have some of the oldest manuscripts of history. From the Icelandic genealogy of Odin, referred to above, we extract the following: Saturnus of Crete, Jupiter, Darius, Erectonius, Troas, Elis, Laomedon, Priam. Exactly the same. Whose daughter is said in the same place to have married Minon or Memnon, whose son was Tror, whom we call Tor, the father of Floritha, ancestor of King Odin. There is a great manuscript genealogy and catalog rolled up into a case in the Royal Library at Windsor Castle, giving at the top the pedigree of the British kings of the line of Brutus. From this we get Saturnius, Jupiter, Dardanus, Erectonius, Tros, Elis, Laomedon, Priam. Curious that the Briton and Saxon should both trace back to the same origin. Now Saturn of Crete, who was he? We have seen that Sankoniatho, the old Phoenician historian, from their traditions identifies Saturn with Jacob, quote, Cronus, whom the Phoenicians call Israel. He also tells us that Cronus had a special son, Yehud, a name wanting only the closing breath to be letter for letter, Yehuda, Judah, the Greek Zeus, a variant of the same. So Zeus or Jupiter, the king of the gods, that is the royal son of 12 of Cronus or Saturn, is Judah. To corroborate this, the Darda or Dara of 1 Chronicles 2:6, whose name figures so prominently among the original Beni Judah, answers exactly with the same variation of name to the Dardanus or Darius, ancestor of Priam and son of Jupiter. Now again, I teach from a Gestalt theory, field theory. I don't expect you to remember the details. I just want you to get a feel for the thoroughness of this guy's research and the way it keeps coming together. The Jewish historian Josephus actually calls Darda Dardanus. Thus, by combined evidence of ancient record and modern discovery, Jupiter equates with Judah. That being so, Odin, the ancestor of all the royal houses which have combined to produce the royal house of Britain, was a ruler of the Hebrew royal tribe through Dardanus, son of Zara. That's why the manuscript at Harold's College was accurate. He was not of the line of David. They were both of the line of Judah. David came through Pharez. Odin came through Zara via Dardanus. Nay more. In Harold's College manuscript, noted at page 25 above Freya, from which we get Friday, another one of the Scandinavian goddesses who deified their ancestors. Freya, the wife of Odin, figures apparently as the daughter of Cadwalder, or Cadwallader, son of King Lucius, himself descended from Anna. Should this mean that she, Freya, was a daughter of that house? It follows that through their mother, all the lines of Odin come from David. From David through the mother, from Odin himself through the line of the father via Zara. So the sons of Odin have, through Freya the wife, the line of David, through Odin the line of Judah through Zara, as God weaves the threads to blend Zara and Pharez together in all the kingly lines. It is a fact recorded by several early church historians that Lucius descended from Anna, daughter of Joseph of Arimathea, left his kingly throne in Britain and became the evangelist of Switzerland and Bavaria. Church history will teach you that. Freya, his daughter or granddaughter, settled in Central Europe at the epic of Odin's historic march into the West. From their marriage, the following genealogy results. Odin descended through Dardanus from Zara, through Judah, Freya through Lucius, from Anna, and Joseph of Arimathea through David, combined in marriage to produce the Tudors, the Stuarts, the Plantagenets, the Hanoverians, the Saxe-Coburgs, the Danes, to produce King George V, Queen Mary, and they now converge in Prince Charles, who will sit on that throne. Pretty amazing, I think. Mind-boggling.